spirit of radio, I would argue the greatest drummer of all time. Just my opinion. Neil Peart and Rush. Welcome back. X's and Bros, Monday through Friday from 6 until 9 across the great state of Michigan and our station affiliates. TRX in Flint, KAD in Cadillac, MAX in Grand Rapids, GRY in Grayling and Gaylord, LUN 100.9 in Midland, Saginaw and Bay City, on the ticket Northern Michigan, WMBN 104.7 FM, 1340 AM in Petoskey and Charlevoix, and in Traverse City, WKAD 93.7 FM. Glad you are with us. Honored to be on those great stations and throughout the entire state of Michigan. 866-838-4843. A week from today, I'll be at Soaring Eagle Casino and Resort. The Getaway Reimagined will be up there for a draft party on Thursday night and our show Friday morning. Hope you can join us. Our friend Bill Simons of The Huge Show on many of these same station affiliates, Monday through Friday, 3 to 6, we'll be at the Caucus Club in downtown Detroit. So if you are coming to the draft in Detroit, swing by and say hello. I think you have to get some type of pass, some type of bracelet to join Billy. But at some point, he's going to be in and out of that place. Stick around, say hello. Thank him for all the fun conversation he has on a day-to-day basis over the last two decades plus. And don't forget, put this on your calendar if you can, June 13 through 16. It is the LPGA Meyer Classic, the 10th annual, at Blithfield Country Club. Lexi Thompson has won the event. Brooke Henderson has won it a couple of times. Nellie Korda has won it. It's a gorgeous track at almost 6,600 yards. We are working. I don't have a lot of influence, but we are working desperately to try and get out there and broadcast from the Meyer Classic in mid-June. That would be a lot of fun. And I'm not afraid to admit, is there shame here? None. Because I love the sport of golf. Do I want to play that track? You bet I do. Let's go to the phone lines. 866-838-4843. Hey, people openly politic for stuff all the time. Why can't I do it for a round of golf? Who do we got, Ben, waiting for us here on X's and Bros?
We got Freddie on the line.
All right, Freddie. What's up, buddy?
Yeah, I played that golf course. I'll mention the golf myself, too, Shep. I played that golf course.
Oh, yeah? And how did you do? You just tore it up, didn't you? I mean, beaver pelt after beaver pelt.
Yeah, I tore up the grass, and I'm guessing that you probably would have drove about 30 yards farther than me. But listen, I had my beer, a few beers. I don't drink much beer, but I had my cigars.
There you go.
I might be the only guy that can only shoot a golf club with a cigar in my mouth. I have to have a cigar in my mouth.
You got your priorities straight. There's nothing wrong with it. We're not good enough. I played with a pro one time, and I used to get pretty angry if I didn't have a good shot, which was quite often. And a pro once said to me, he said, "Hey, man, you just can't do that." And I said, "Yeah, I know, but you know, it just bothers that." He's like, no, you don't understand. You're not good enough to get that angry. And ever since then, I said to myself, let's just go out and let's have certain goals. If I strike the ball well, if I hit the ball well, I'm good. Now, I will say this. I played with my son the other day, and I'm shooting, I think I shot like an 87. We played from the tips where he likes to play from. I don't know why, because he's not good enough to play from there. Usually, I play from whites. Actually, we played from the blues. And I counted them up, 8 three putts. 8. And I said to myself, why do I not practice putting more when it's the worst part of my game? Like, I'm on in regulation more often times than not. I only double bogeyed 2 holes, I think, for the most part. 2 or 3. It's unbelievable. Par 4 or 5. It's unbelievable. I'm on the green in 2 and on a long par 3, and I'm within, 12 feet, and I'm sitting there 3 putting. It's ridiculous. Terrible.
That's what makes the great ones great. The putting wins the money, and You know, when we speak of great ones in any sport, that's why a lot of them can't be great coaches, because they're so great at it that they don't understand how to. When the player is not as great as them, they just can't figure it out.
100%. 100%.
Yeah.
Well said. That's well said. That's why Magic Johnson, Wayne Gretzky, Isaiah Thomas, Larry Bird, they were not great coaches. That's such a good point. Think of this. The great coaches in history, take one per sport. And you can even go right now. Let's just say Andy Reid. Was Andy Reid an NFL player? No. Okay? Because Bill Belichick's he's not coaching. It's not like Bill Belichick was a great coach, or a great player, I should say. Scotty Bowman. Nope. Scotty Bowman in hockey. No, he was not. The only exceptions might be, Bill Russell way back in the day, but they didn't have that many teams, eight teams. Maybe Phil Jackson, Pat Riley, pretty good players. They were good players. They won championships.
But they were great players.
Correct.
You brought up Larry Bird. Larry Bird was great.
Yes.
I thought he was a pretty good coach. He took a team to the finals, so I thought he was a pretty good coach. But
good point.
Yeah. Anyways, on the Tigers, I'm glad you answered a little bit about AJ. I'm a fan of AJ. I just think the town has seen losing for so long that they don't know. You know, it's hard to gauge him because you're right. The 162 game schedule, a lot of it was hard to gauge him. I'm always pulling for the Tigers, and I'm a huge Tigers fan. My favorite team. We've gone on and on. The 84 team, you know. But speaking of the 84 team, a lot of people are giving the Tigers a lot of crap for not spending here and spending there this year. And I don't know if it's right or wrong. That's not really the point of my call. But my thing is, I feel like this team, all the players are bringing up from the minors, reminds me of the 78, 79, 80 Tigers, and all these young kids came up at one time, and then when they figured out who's good, who should stay, who should go, they started trading some of those young guys and started bringing in those veterans that the team really needed. Darrell Evans, Dave Bergman, Willie Hernandez, we know the names, Chet Lemon.
Sure.
You think this is what Scott Harris is doing, like figuring out who should stay, who should go, and he'll make those moves within the next year and a half?
Yeah, it's a feeling out process. It's a really good point, and thanks for the phone call, Freddie. It's a really good point. I think you have to sift your way through that. I don't think you can necessarily know that right now. I just think in today's day and age in baseball, and in all fairness to you, I used the same example earlier in the week, or maybe it was last week. About the 84 team and how we want all these young guys to come together and go through growing pains and then have it turn around. Not everything is guaranteed. I don't know how valued some of their talent truly is. When you look at young talent throughout Major League Baseball, how many people are looking at Detroit's roster and saying, anyone who's 25 and under and is a superstar, these are the guys I want. Fill in the blank and look at all the Tigers. I don't know what people around the league, how they view Detroit's young talent. And at one point, Freddie, we've got to suggest it's no longer young talent, right? Now, Parker Meadows is young. Riley Green is still young. Spencer Torkel is still young. And when I say young, I mean they don't have a lot of major league at-bats and experience under their collective belt. Cole Keith, obviously, still young. Baez, Urshela, Veerling, Canna. They're not young anymore. Is Jake Rogers considered a young player? No, I don't think he is. He was young when the Tigers got him, but he's not young anymore. I do want to bring up what Freddie just kind of alluded to. He said the point of his call wasn't necessarily how much money they're spending. Fair enough. But I think it's fair to expect them to spend more than they are. We'll get to that when we come back. And don't forget, Max Boltman of The Athletic joins us to talk hockey at the bottom of the hour on X's and Bros across the great state of Michigan.
in the den.
Step up to the plate with Eagle Casino and Sports, the mobile sportsbook app that you can bet on all your favorites all year round, including, of course, our national pastime. So download the app and start winning today at Eagle Casino and Sports. Made in Michigan, made for Michigan. Must be 21 years or older and in Michigan to play. This date, April 18, is big in Tigers history. On this date in 1880, Tigers Hall of Famer Sam Crawford was born in Wahoo, Nebraska. He played 15 of his 17 Major League seasons in Detroit and helped the team win 3 American League pennants. He also owned the Major League Baseball record for career triples. Roughly 100 years later, in 1983, Miguel Cabrera was born in Maracay, Venezuela. The soon-to-be Hall of Famer was a 12-time All-Star, won 4 batting titles, 7 Silver Sluggers, and a Triple Crown. He also retired as one of just 7 players in history to record 3,000 hits and 500 home runs in a career.
Hey, Michigan, let's go big. I'm Herman Moore, Lions All-Pro wide receiver, and I'm talking real big-time winning on the hottest slots and table games on one incredible app, Eagle Casino and Sports.
Sign up now and get up to $1,500. That's right. We'll match your deposit for up to $1,500, and you'll get 100 free spins.
Eagle Casino and Sports. Made in Michigan. Made for Michigan.
Must be 21 or older in Michigan to play.
After the hour on this Thursday, X's and Bros on a Monday through Friday, 6 until 9. Glad you're with us. A week from today, I'll be at Soaring Eagle Casino and Resort. Really excited about the getaway reimagined, going up there for a draft party hosted by Herman Moore, former Lion great. And then Friday morning, we will be broadcasting live from Ascend there at Soaring Eagle Casino and Resort. A fantastic venue. I just cannot wait. That's going to be a blast next week. Meanwhile, my friend Bill Simonson, you can hear on these same radio stations and the huge show Monday through Friday, 3 to 6, will be at the Caucus Club in Detroit. Our phone number, 866-838-4843. About 15 minutes from now, Max Boltman will join us from The Athletic, and he will talk of the Red Wings season, future seasons, and I do want his thoughts on who wins the heart after Nikita Kucherov got a goal and an assist last night and has 100 assists on the year. He and Connor McDavid with 100 assist seasons. Hadn't had one in the NHL in 32 years, and then you have 2 in the same season. Ben, our producer, yeah. What do you got for us on a text?
This one is over to the Tigers. Since the Tigers started the season with a 6-1 record, their record is 4-7. They must start hitting.
Yeah, absolutely. We talked about it earlier. The offense is just not good right now. This is up to every individual. I don't have a magical number, okay? But remember, Sparky Anderson said, don't judge us until 40 games. Many people in baseball would tell you this. 162-game season. You're going to have 60 wins. You're going to have 60 losses. That's 120. See, I'm really good at math. That means the 42 in between, or the 42 around those games, matters. Those are the ones you have to watch out for. What are you going to do with those? Because you're going to kind of fall into the 61 games or 60 games one way or the other. Even the best team in the American League a year ago, regular season-wise now, lost 61 games. That was Baltimore, by the way. Even the world champion lost 72 games. The best team in baseball, record-wise, not in the American League, but all of baseball, the Atlanta Braves, lost 58 games. So there goes the 60-60, but it's still pretty damn close. The Dodgers, for example, lost 62 games. So there's your 60-60 for the most part, and then what are you looking for? What are you going to do with the other 42? Now, what the other 42 is, I don't know. I'm not saying it's the first 120. Then what do you do with the last 42 games? That's not what I'm suggesting. I'm just saying during a season, because it's such a long season, and it's so unique, right? I mean, we see hockey and basketball each with 82 games. Football's on an island because it's once a week. Baseball is very unique in the sense that it's 162. It's every single day for the most part. It gets long. It gets tough. It gets challenging mentally and physically. You're going to lose. You're probably going to lose 60 games. Who those and what those games are and how they go about it, that's when you start to judge, right? I get it for sure. And it's something that, you know, we kind of look at and we kind of see that it continues. That's just the way it is. There's unique circumstances. A couple of years ago, the Dodgers won 111 games and lost only 51. That's an incredible season. They didn't win the entire thing. It didn't help them. It didn't help them in the win the World Championship. But what we're judging right now is all we can judge. And I don't think our texter is suggesting, oh my gosh, we're not 20 games in and I'm pushing the panic button. No, that's not what they're suggesting. They're just saying at some point, the offense becomes what it is. At some point, it's no longer, yeah, this is what I'm observing. At some point, it's, you know what? This is who they are. That's when you start to worry. You're not winning this division, even though it's a weak division. You're not going to win the division if you're ranked in the bottom four in runs, average, OBP, slugging, and OPS. Throw out average. Forget that I even mentioned that. I don't know even why I even researched that. Forget it. It's about getting on base. On base percentage. Only four teams are worse. It's about driving them in. Only three teams are worse. It's about having pop in your lineup. Only two teams are worse. You and I are not going to freak out about this. You and I are not going to bite our nails down to the quick and say, oh my gosh, this season they're in deep trouble. No, there's no reason to do that. None whatsoever. But if this is the pattern that continues, if this is what this team is, there is a good reason to be concerned. That's okay too. Now, here's what somebody had said just before, or via text, just before the break, or no, it was Freddie who called in and said, the point of my call isn't about how much money they spend. Fair enough. And I appreciate that. Because throwing money at things doesn't always work. It really doesn't. People think you have to spend money. You have to spend it wisely. Last year, in Major League Baseball, the Mets, the Yankees, the Padres, those are your top three spending teams. They didn't win it all. Rangers were fourth. They did win it all. I'm not saying you've got to spend a slew of money to get it done. Angels are a pretty good example. Didn't make the playoffs. They were terrible a year ago. They're in the top 10 in spending from last year. But the teams that are reaching the postseason oftentimes, are the teams that are willing to spend money. Where do you think the Tigers rank? I don't expect Detroit to go out and spend what the New York Mets are spending. It's borderline irresponsible. $308 million. The Texas Rangers a few years ago spent $150 million on two players, Corey Seager and Marcus Semien. People in Dallas don't give a crap about that right now. You know why? Because it paid off. Because they won. But how much do you think they should be spending? Here's what my guess was. I thought they should be somewhere in the neighborhood of $140 to $150 million. Easy to say, it's not my money. The league average this year is roughly $165 million. That's what the league average is. The team that won the National League, Arizona, is slightly above that. The team that won it all is far exceeded that. The Tigers are at $106 million. They rank 22nd. Here's the argument. The argument against it. Brewers have been successful. They're below. Orioles have been successful. They're below. Cleveland's been successful. They're below. Tampa, Cincinnati, all below the Tigers. Who says you can't win? I'm not saying you can't. Draft, develop, and then sprinkle in what you need. I just think Detroit is in a position where they could be. Tampa's kind of a bad example because they don't draw many people. Detroit's in a good position. Detroit should be spending more than they have. Max Boltman on the other side to talk Red Wings, NHL, and a whole lot more when we wrap up this Thursday edition of X's and Bros across the great state of Michigan.
Bill Simonson here for my good friend Josh Garvey. Now, he's a managing shareholder at Dorn Mayhew's Grand Rapids office. Their world headquarters are in Troy, Michigan, on the east side of the state, and they have locations all around the world. They have over 550 motivated accounting professionals, 90 years in business, and I mentioned the 10 offices worldwide. So if you want to connect and partner with one of the top CPA accounting and business firms in the world, they're right here in Michigan. Dorn Mayhew's Troy office on the east side of the state, and Josh Garvey is a managing shareholder for their Dorn Mayhew GR office. Right there by the S-curve, you'll see the new Dorn Mayhew sign. You can find out more. Just Google Dorn Mayhew. That's DoreenMayhew or Dorn.com. They're one of America's and the world's top CPA accounting and business firms. They're Dorn Mayhew.
We're teeing off our 10th year. At the Meijer LPGA Classic for Simply Give. Get ready for the best tour yet to help neighbors in need while enjoying golf, food, and family fun. Join us June 13th through the 16th at Blythefield Country Club for fabulous food, Discoveryland for kids, and of course, elite women golfers from around the world competing to help feed our neighbors. Get your tickets now at MeijerLPGAClassic.com.
Welcome back on this Thursday to X's and Bros. We are on throughout the great state of Michigan in Flint and Cadillac and Grand Rapids and Grayling and Gaylord and Midland and Saginaw and Bay City. We're on in Petoskey and Charlevoix. We're on in Traverse City. And we're on with you Monday through Friday from 6 until 9. Glad to have you on board. It was a disappointing way to end the season, watching the Washington Capitals beat the Flyers in Philadelphia 2-1. While the Red Wings staged in another incredible comeback, the 14th comeback of the season, in order for them to win the final game of the year at the Bell Center in Montreal. Max Boltman has covered the Wings, done a fabulous job with it for years now with The Athletic. You can follow him on X. His handle is M_Boltman. And it's really been, to a certain extent, a fun season. I don't know what it has been like for you, Max, but here's what I said yesterday, and I love the debate. For me, it was a disappointing one because of expectations that changed. I don't know how many people thought the Red Wings were going to reach the playoffs at the beginning of the year, but when you have a 9-point lead at the end of February and you have that momentum going your way, to not reach the postseason was a disappointment. How do you view the 2024 campaign for the Red Wings?
Yeah, it's a great question. I just put actually out an article this morning on this exact topic, right? Of it was progress. Does that make it a success? And I think, you know, when you look at it just on playoffs, it has to be a letdown from where they were at the end of February. But I think the season is also more than whether or not they made the playoffs, right? Like I put in the article, if the difference in whether the season was a success or not with those same 91 points is what happened in that Washington-Philly game, that's a tough way to judge. But if you look at smaller segments, right, did they make progress? Yeah, I think they did. Did they get to their ultimate goal? No, I don't think they did. And then the toughest question is, did they set themselves up for the future? I think you can argue in some ways that they did, but you can look at other things that the only Simon Edmonds only got 16 games. A lot of their guys in Grand Rapids didn't get up and play any. It's an itchy feeling, I think, to be a team that both didn't make the playoffs and only played one rookie for meaningful games this year. I think there's a lot that you have to parse to figure out if this season was a success. So I know that's not the great radio answer here, but I think it's a really nuanced one that we're going to need weeks to figure out, you know, was this season a success or not. I'm very curious to see what Steve Yzerman has to say whenever we hear from him.
Yeah, listen, there is no perfect answer. I mean, that's not – look, people who think – they tune into sports radio and think, oh, Max is going to have the answer for me right off the hop, and that's going to be the be-all, end-all. We don't know sometimes, and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. It's an educated guess. It's what you have gathered from talking with players and coaches throughout the season. But I do wonder what they were missing this year, because I think when people look at the Red Wings, they go, well, but the defense isn't very good. So they immediately look at the blue line. When defense is a team game, it's not just defensemen. What do you think they were lacking and why they missed out?
Yeah, I think you're spot on. I think last summer they went into the offseason knowing they needed to add scoring, and they did it. But it came at a cost, right? And it was that the forward group that they assembled was more skilled. It had more scoring talent. It was not very responsible. And so all year long, they searched to find lines that could play kind of a balanced hockey, I guess. At the top, obviously, you know what you're asking for from Larkin, DeBrincat, Kane, guys like that. It most of it does come in the offensive end. But down the lineup, they just couldn't get enough guys to create favorable matchups, either at home or on the road in some cases, when the hockey got harder, when the checking got tighter, when you weren't going to have this flashy rush offense. You needed to be able to, A, score ugly goals around the net, and B, limit your risk so that you're not giving up easy offense the other way. When you look at that March stretch, in addition to the Dylan Larkin injury, which is obviously a big factor, it was their identity, that the DNA of their game was not geared enough to the defensive side of the puck. And there's some goaltending stuff, too, I think they'll have to address. But I think you're spot on. It's defense, and that doesn't just mean defensemen.
He is Max Bultman. He writes for The Athletic, a great follow on X at @M_Bultman. The article today, the Red Wings made real progress this season. That much is clear. Does that make the season a success, though? It's at The Athletic NHL. Check it out. He's joining us here on X's and Bros. With that said, and I think so many people feel like they have guys on this team who don't have playoff experience, and that's why a postseason push was important. I said they do. Sure, Mo Sider doesn't. Edvinson doesn't. Raymond doesn't. There's plenty of guys who had playoff experience. What do they need? Moving forward, what has to be corrected?
Yeah, I think we mentioned goaltending a second ago.
Yep.
And I think that's an area, when we saw this team at their best in January and February, they were getting excellent goaltending play from Alex Lyon. Is that reasonable to expect from him year-round? Probably not for a guy who has had to bounce around. I think I've been really impressed by Alex Lyon this season. I think he has clearly established himself as an NHL goalie. But in order to have that kind of 50-55 game horse that you see most of these playoff teams have, I don't know that the Red Wings can say they have that right now. Certainly with Billy Huso's injuries, I think it would have to be an uncomfortable feeling to go into next year with just Huso and Lyon, who are the two guys they have under contract. So I think an upgrade in goal is the quickest way for them to really take the next step. If they can, and there are some available, a guy like Jacob Markstrom in Calgary was a top five goaltender this season. Linus Ullmark in Boston won the Vezina last year. UC Saros in Nashville has been excellent for a long time now. All three of those guys have had their names come up in trade conversations lately. And I think it's possible we see at least one, if not two, or maybe even three of them move. I think if the Red Wings can get into one of those mixes, that's the quickest path in terms of an offseason upgrade to getting this team back to where they were in that hot run where they know they can lean on an above-average goaltender.
Max, it's really unfortunate that in today's society, this is just the way it is. This is the mindset of many fans and many members of the media, quite honestly. You experience it on a regular basis, too. So I don't want to add to it, but everybody wants to point fingers. Who is to blame? It's shared throughout. But Steve Yzerman, as good as he has been in building this team through the draft with some young prospects and sprinkling in some free agent pickups, he has misfired on a lot of the goalies that he has brought in. Nedeljkovic, for example, is one of them. Huso, you just mentioned, and Lyon are both more like twos rather than ones. How much of this is on Steve Yzerman, do you think, in the inability to reach the postseason this year?
Well, he's a general manager, so he builds the roster. I think, you know, obviously he gets a healthy slice of the responsibility, I guess we'd call it, for that situation and building the roster. With the goalie specifically, I think this is really interesting because I was having a conversation on a podcast earlier this year, and we were talking about, you know, league average. Average keeps going down, right? You look at save percentage, it was trending up for a long time there in the mid-2010s up to the 2020s. It's going down now. And I don't know if that's because of expansion and there's more teams, which means more goalies in the NHL, which dilutes the pool, or if it's something else. But the number of teams that have that rock solid number one goaltender is going down. Some of that's probably just, you know, shooting talent, much like in baseball, like, you know, hitting, having a hard time catching up to pitching. I think goaltending's having a hard time catching up to the offense, the skill, the shooting of the modern NHL. I think most teams are looking for a goalie now. I think there's really only 8 to 12, maybe 15 guys in the NHL that teams are going to feel really, really good about going into a playoff series with. And so it's a scarcity issue in that position in particular. That's not the whole deal with the Red Wings, right? I think, you know, we talked about, I think they need to get harder. I think they need to get more defensively responsible, especially from the forward group. I think they need a number two right defenseman behind Moritz Seider to help take some burden off him. But it's a really interesting, especially in goal, a really interesting issue.
You know what, Max, I compare it to quarterbacks in the NFL because those are two key positions. They can make a difference in a game. I don't think there's better than 10 quarterbacks in the NFL that you'd really want to have. And I think it's the same thing with goalies. And they're such important positions. I had this discussion with a good friend of mine yesterday, Sean Beligian, who loves hockey. He watches it all the time. We were wondering, I love Dylan Larkin. I want him on my team every single time. I think he's a hell of a leader. I think he plays really hard. I wonder if he's a number one center. Lucas Raymond, probably too early to judge if he's a top line guy. Alex DeBrincat on their top line needs a facilitator, right? I look at the great teams, the teams that are contending. Their number one centers are really impressive. I mean, look at Vancouver. Their number two center is JT Miller. He's got, 37 goals, 103 points. How much do they need to add to their top six in your mind?
Well, if they can, right? Like, that's always the key, right? Dylan Larkin, I think, is a number one center. Is he a number one center on a Stanley Cup winner? That's kind of another question, right? Like, I think when you look at the East field this year, I was talking about this with a buddy the other day. There's only really three, maybe four centers in the East that you can say, you know, that guy's ahead of Dylan Larkin. That's Austin Matthews. That's Alexander Barkov. And I'm blanking here at the end here.
Sidney Crosby and Sam Reinhart.
Well, Crosby didn't make the playoff field, and Reinhart's, I think, playing on the wing there. So, but yes, I get your point. Like, I just mean, you know, in terms of the Eastern Conference playoff field, the teams
I'm sorry. Okay, so, Was it Braden? Was it Braden Point?
Braden Point, yes, that's exactly
okay.
Right. So,
okay.
Yes, and so I think, you know, him and Sebastian Aho in Carolina are pretty comparable to me. So I think, like, you can be competitive in that field with Larkin as your one seed, but every team wants to add more to their top six. And I think when you talk about JT Miller as a number two, that's really the key. It's not so much Larkin as the one. It's who do you have right behind him? And you saw that when he was out. You know, it was asking so much of JT Compher to step up. And even when Larkin's in, you're asking a lot of JT Compher to be, you know, go head-to-head with a guy like JT Miller and win that battle, right? So
right.
I do think if you had another guy at Dylan Larkin's level, I think of, like, you know, what New York's doing. Like, they got Mika Zibanejad, who I think is pretty comparable. That's the team that won the President's Trophy. Pretty comparable to Larkin as their number one center. But behind him, they have Vincent Trocheck, who's like a point-per-game player with great defensive impacts. To me, that's where it is it's really that number two center.
But it's a fair argument because obviously there are Austin Matthews and Connor McDavid and Nathan McKinnon's out there, and that's a different level of player, totally.
Yeah, I mean, look, everybody wants those. Every team wants those. I mean, Steven Stamkos might be in that conversation just because Tampa's reached the postseason. But,
yeah.
Look, again, I can't reiterate enough how much I love Dylan Larkin. He's probably my favorite player. I just wonder, that's all. I mean, if you're looking at a Stanley Cup contending team, I think the depth is important. We're talking with Max Boltman. He of The Athletic. You can follow him on X, M_Boltman. Read his stuff in The Athletic. You can follow The Athletic. It's great theater for sure when you read it. And you can email him, mboltman@theathletic.com. He's always willing to take that and get into that bag of conversation with hockey. Who's the Hart Trophy winner? I mean, last night, Nikita Kucherov had a goal and an assist, picked up his 100th assist. It had been 32 years since the NHL had a player with 100 assists in a season. Now the NHL has two. The conversation's down to four players. Who gets your vote?
It's the best Hart Trophy race that I have voted in. It is the tightest for sure, and there are four, in my mind, deserving winners. The two guys you mentioned, Nathan McKinnon, and Austin Matthews, who came really close to 70 goals. Mm-hmm. The one thing I kind of struggle with is when you have all those statistical, you know, oh, it's the first time a guy's done this since then. It's the first time a guy's done this since then, right? The 100 assist thing. It's the first time in however long, and two guys did it. That tells me a little bit something about where the game has been headed offensively, and that not that it cheapens it by any means, but I do think it speaks to kind of an overall trend in the game. When I took a step back from it and I was doing my voting, I just said there was not a player I watched this year that was as dominant as consistently as Nathan McKinnon. He's right there in terms of the statistics with all those guys. I don't know that he hit the round number benchmark and either goals or assists that a Matthews or a McDavid or a Kucherov did, but he was really close in the final production, and he was as dominant shift to shift as anybody I saw on one of the best teams in the league. So I intend to vote for Nathan McKinnon.
It's hard to argue that you're wrong. I mean, I love watching Connor McDavid. He's probably my favorite player in the NHL to watch. But when you see what McKinnon did, you see what Kucherov did, you see what Matthews did. Look, at some point, people forget, Ted Williams hit over 400. He didn't win the MVP that year. Joe DiMaggio did. So you're going to have some discrepancies with people's opinions on this. It's a good question to have, right? I mean, it's a good problem to have. I mean, David Pastrnak's unbelievable. He had another 100-point season. He's not even in the discussion. So it's really fun to have. Tell me about the Red Wings prospects. When you see, and we were just talking about top six forwards, we're talking about trying to shore up the blue line a little bit, questions in net. How do you view Detroit's minor league system who can help this team at the ready?
It's a great question. It's maybe the most important question that going into this summer, because they're not going to have as much cap space anymore as they have recently. They got big raises due for Seider and Raymond. And the best antidote to that is being able to bring up your prospects on those really cheap entry-level deals. They got a couple guys who I think can help fairly soon. Carter Mazur in Grand Rapids. He's a little skinny, but he's got that kind of hard pest game to him, in addition to some offense. Marco Casper, similar deal, although he's a little younger. And then Nate Danielson in the Western Hockey League was their top 10 pick last year. And he made a real nice run in the preseason this season. I don't think he's ever really had a shot at making the team, but he stuck around to the very end, and he was way more productive than I expected. If one or even two of those guys could make a real run at making this team next year and contributing, I think that would be a big deal for them. The thing is, though, I don't think he answers that question you raised a couple ago about, is there a star-level player there? I think Danielson could be a good number two center. I think Casper and Mazur are going to be really effective, probably third-line players. But I think the question for the Red Wings going forward is going to be, do you have another star, especially at the center position, to complement Dylan Larkin and to really get this team to where it needs to go? Those guys are young. I don't want to put ceilings on anybody, but I don't know that you can say when you're projecting it that they definitely have that, at the least.
Final thought, Derek Lalonde. Grade his performance as a head coach this year, and where does he need to improve if and when he's back next season?
Yeah, and I think everyone's going to look at at two things. The people that really like Lalonde are going to look at the improvement, the 11 points going from 80 to 91, and the people that really don't are going to look at the month of March, winning 3 out of 14 games, not being able to beat even the Arizona Coyotes, when one of those wins would have put Detroit in the playoffs.
Twice.
Without Larkin. And so, yeah, it's a tough reality. To me, it's like it's around probably a B minus. I think you have to give real credence to the improvement, to the fact that they did exceed certainly my preseason prediction, which was 88 points. They get to 91. I didn't think that 91 would get you to the cusp of the playoff race, but they were right there. But at the same time, I think, you know, the coaching staff has to eat a share of the blame, a decent share of the blame, when you talk about what happened in March, what not being able to do anything without Dylan Larkin. Players are the ones on the ice, but, you know, there's got to be a couple more buttons the coaches can press to get a little more juice out of the month of March than they did. And that's the month that did them in the end. So I'll say a B minus. I think that'll be too high for some people. And I think there'll be some people that say, I'm knocking them unfairly for March. So I guess that probably tells me I'm in the right area.
So well said and so well crafted all season long, every year on The Athletic. Max Boltman, thanks for the time today. Really appreciate what you do. Thanks for your professionalism. Thanks for all the great articles and keeping us engaged with Red Wings hockey and the NHL in general. Talk to you soon, okay?
Hey, great to hear from you, Shep, anytime.
Yeah, you bet, man. Max Boltman, great job on The Athletic, at @M_Boltman. Follow him. You'll be smarter. You'll be smarter when it comes to hockey. So really appreciate that insight. Very interesting, I think. Something we can pick up again tomorrow. This show went by quickly here today. A lot of it has to do with you because of your texts, because of your phone calls. We enjoy it. We hope you do too. Tell your friends. We look forward to talking with you every Monday through Friday from 6 until 9. Throughout the great state of Michigan, in Flint and Cadillac and Grand Rapids and Grayling and Gaylord and Midland and Saginaw and Bay City and Petoskey and Charlevoix and Traverse City. Hi to everybody up there. Thanks for your patronage, and we'll see you back here tomorrow. Our thanks to Ben, our producer, Max Boltman of The Athletic, and to you for listening to X's and Bros here on the Michigan Sports Network throughout the great state of Michigan. See you tomorrow morning.
June 23rd, the world's most notorious rock band is coming to Soaring Eagle Casino. Motley Crue. The Crue. Part of the Soaring Eagle Summer Outdoor Concert Series. Tickets start at $54 and are on sale now at the box office and online at etix.com. Party on and take a ride on the wild side. Motley Crue. Sunday, June 23rd at Soaring Eagle Casino and Resort.
Huge here with a reminder that on Thursday, April 25th, I'll be in Detroit for the NFL Draft. I'll be broadcasting live 3 until 6 from the world-famous Caucus Club as they prepare for the private NFL VIP party with Bull Rush Sports Management and certified NFL PA agent David Gregory. We'll be joined by Josh Garvey and his team from Dorn Mayhew. Matt Golden, the CEO at the Tullymore Golf Resort, will check in. And also our friends from Copper Craft Distillery. Be listening for your chance to win a VIP bracelet to get in to this private NFL Draft Night Bash at the Caucus Club in downtown Detroit, less than a half mile from the NFL Draft Stage. It's being presented by the Michigan Sports Network and David Gregory and Bull Rush Sports Management. Be listening to The Huge Show for your chance to win a VIP bracelet to the Huge NFL Draft Watch Party Thursday, April 25th in Detroit.
We're teeing off our 10th year at the Meijer LPGA Classic for Simply Give. Get ready for the best tour yet to help neighbors in need while enjoying golf, food, and family fun. Join us June 13th through the 16th at Blythefield Country Club for fabulous food, Discoveryland for kids, and of course, elite women golfers from around the world competing to help feed our neighbors. Get your tickets now at MeijerLPGAClassic.com.